This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, welcome to Radio Reading Services weekly edition of the AARP, the magazine. Our first story today from the upfront section, the A-List. Six Life Lessons from Judith Jameson. Number one, find discipline. I've always loved structure. I could find structure with piano, violin, and later with dance. That discipline and the discipline of faith kept me on a straight path. Number two, connect to genius. After joining the Ailey Company in 1965, I was lucky enough to establish a spiritual connection with the greatest artist I've ever met, company founder Alvin Ailey. He would show me a step, I would move. There was very little conversation. He was like a spiritual walker. Number three, build it. When I became artistic director after Mr. Ailey passed, I tried to figure out how to fulfill his vision. And it was sitting right in front of me. Build our own studio, our own building. We were bursting at the seams. I just wish he were here to see it. There is light inside. You can feel it. Number four, take care of your body. I took care of mine as best I could. When you're older, you can keep it going with smaller movements. Just sitting there, I'm doing contractions and releases, trying to strengthen my core. You won't be moving as robustly as you used to, but you can still do something. Number five, choose your family. My kids are the Ailey dancers, and they grew up right before my eyes. Now they have children, so I have a bunch of grandchildren. They send me pictures of their families, and it's a whole other level of young people. Kids, babies being born, brings a smile to my face. And six, dress for success. It's a uniform I've been wearing forever, a black turtleneck that this wonderful designer from Brooklyn makes for me. Thank God I have three of them. Our next story today, When Ageism Kills. This is from the Between Us section. The Between Us section. Authorities say some two dozen vibrant older people lost their lives to a serial killer in North Texas in a two-year spree that law enforcement and others initially failed to investigate. Age bias is ever with us. It has been called the last acceptable prejudice. Ageist jokes and tropes appear in popular entertainment in ways that would never be acceptable with matters of race or religion. Ageism in the workplace, in our culture, in our healthcare system, ruins lives. How is it still acceptable to perpetuate stereotypes of older Americans as befuddled, ill, and out of touch, painting with a single misinformed brush more than 118 million Americans over the age of 50. In Unnatural Causes, the Texas Elders Murders, you'll read about a lethal strain of ageism that led to the deaths of more than 20 innocent older women and one man in Texas. Authorities now believe a psychopath robbed and murdered older, well-off widows who were mostly in their 80s and 90s and residing in independent living communities in the Dallas area. Despite mountains of evidence of suspicious deaths, including eight in one facility, police, medical examiners, and the facility's staff wrote off these crimes as death by natural causes and failed to investigate. And so, the murders continued for more than 2 years. Why did no one care? Was it because the victims were old? To find the answers to these disturbing questions, executive editor Bill Horn worked with Lise Olson, a senior reporter for the nonprofit Texas Observer, for more than 18 months. What they found will shock you. Lethal ageism persists in more subtle and pernicious ways, too. The calamity in America's nursing home system in the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic revealed a heartlessness at the center of society's views toward vulnerable elders. Understaffed, poorly resourced nursing homes were overwhelmed and many older citizens died needlessly. We found age bias in so many aspects of our healthcare system that this hearing can really not address all of them, said Senator John Breaux, a Democrat from Louisiana, addressing a U.S. Senate Special Committee on Aging. Here's another shocking fact. Breaux testified publicly to this terrible truth in 2003, nearly 20 years ago. Tragically, not much has changed, as we documented in our award-winning investigation in the AARP Bulletin, An American Tragedy, Nursing Homes and the Pandemic, in December 2020. Learn more about AARP's fight against age discrimination of all kinds at aarp.org/age discrimination. And if you believe your rights have been violated under state or federal laws, you can seek our help at litigation@aarp.org. And that's from Robert Love, Editor-in-Chief. And now the related story, the Texas elder murders. Unnatural causes. Authorities believe a psychopath murdered nearly 24 older women in the Dallas area, largely at independent living facilities, starting in 2016. Despite mountains of evidence of suspicious deaths over 2 years, police, medical examiners, and the facility staff initially wrote off the homicides as death by natural causes and failed to investigate. Was it because the victims were too old? By Lise Olson. The shock. Luthi Harris liked to dress up when she went out, even for a Walmart shopping run. On March 20, 2018, Harris freshened her bright pink lipstick, then slipped on a gold and jade necklace, along with a few other favorite pieces of jewelry. The slim Vietnamese-American widow, Kim, to her friends and family, had moved to a house on Warm Breeze Lane in Dallas with her husband, Bill, in 2003, and stayed on after his death a few years later. A spry 81, Harris was known as fun and friendly. She gave away $2 bills as good luck gifts, which she did so often that she ordered them from the bank in bundles, her son-in-law later recalled. She was just a hoot to be around, he said. But on that day in 2018, Harris didn't seem to notice the bald, clean-shaven male shopper, wearing neatly pressed slacks and a collared shirt, standing in an adjacent checkout line at Walmart. The man blended into the background like a security guard, probably because he'd once worked as one. He exited the parking lot first and drove away in a gray sedan, security footage later showed. Harris went home. A few hours later, police, following a tip, arrived and discovered her lifeless body on the bed. It looked at first as if Harris had passed away peacefully in her sleep. The front door had been locked, and her cozy home was intact, stuffed with her late husband's vast collection of model airplanes. But gone were her own prized possessions, her collection of lucky $2 bills, her gold necklace with its jade pendant, her rings, and her oversized red jewelry box, with drawers full of jade, gold, and other treasures, including papers that showed her journey from a restaurant owner and mother in Vietnam to a U.S. military veteran's wife in Texas. Her house keys had disappeared, too. The clue to foul play was discovered on the underside of a pillow, a smudge of Harris's magenta lipstick on the polka-dotted case. Later, a Dallas County pathologist found patterns of tiny red dots on her skin known as petechiae, and other subtle signs around her eyes and throat that he determined to be indications she was asphyxiated. The most likely murder weapon, her pillow. A homicide investigation began immediately. Within days, high-ranking law enforcement leaders in the Dallas area, including the district attorneys of Dallas and Collin counties, gathered for an unusual press conference and made a shocking announcement. It appeared that Luthi Harris was not the only older widow to be stalked and smothered for her jewelry, but just one of many. With TV cameras rolling, officials admitted that a serial killer had been stalking older Dallas and Plano women for at least 2 years in a previously undetected crime spree that could include hundreds of cases. Detectives in Dallas, the sprawling suburb of Plano, and the smaller cities of Richardson and Frisco had already begun reviewing older Texans' deaths connected to jewelry thefts to determine if those deaths, all deemed natural at the time, were in fact homicides. The Dallas Police Department alone planned to examine at least 750 recent deaths, an admittedly monumental task, said Dallas Assistant Police Chief David Pews. Pews revealed they had already identified a suspect, Billy Schemmermer, the man who had been surveilling Harris at Walmart and was arrested with her jewelry clutched in his hand. Schemmermer had worked in home health care for years, and cell phone tracking suggests he surveilled older victims in parking lots and upscale retirement complexes. He was looking for expensive jewelry and plotting his access and exit routes to and from their homes and apartments. He often pretended to be a maintenance man to gain entry, authorities said. Over the following months, a series of horrific phone calls went out to sons, daughters, and other relatives all across North Dallas and beyond. They had long ago buried loved ones who were assumed to have passed away peacefully. Lauren Adair Smith heard from a Dallas homicide detective in April 2018. Her mother, Phyllis Payne, had died 2 years earlier. "I have some shocking news for you," the officer said. "We believe she may not have died of natural causes." "I said, if this is a joke, this is really sick," Adair Smith recalls. It wasn't. Schemmermer, then in Dallas County Jail on a $1 million bond, eventually faced a long list of capital murder charges in Dallas and Collin counties. He repeatedly proclaimed his innocence. "I just can't believe this," he said. "Where I come from, our culture, we don't even think about murder." His first trial for Harris's murder in November 2021 ended in a hung jury. But in his second trial on the same facts 5 months later, a new jury convicted him after deliberating for 45 minutes. The families of other people Schemmermer allegedly killed were not sure they'd ever get their day in court, so they gathered to hear the verdict. Among them, M.J. Jennings, whose mother, Lee Corkin, is one of 13 victims named in Dallas County indictments. "Elated, ecstatic, thrilled, relieved," Jennings texted. "Finally, some justice. It was so wonderful to hear guilty." Schemmermer is now in prison serving two sentences of life without parole for the murder of Luthi Harris and after another verdict was handed down October 7th for the murder of Mary Sue Brooks. He faces additional murder charges in two counties for killing 20 more victims, all in similar circumstances. Victims' families believe he's also linked to two more deaths, for which he has not been indicted. His days of freedom may be past, but his case poses a troubling question that goes far beyond Texas. Assuming authorities are correct in their assertions that Schemmermer is guilty of dozens of murders, how could such a brazen crime spree unfold over the course of 2 years, presenting case after unsolved case, sending more and more families into unending grief, without alarms being raised by police or the facilities charged with the protection of those victims? Our shocking conclusion? Because the victims were old. AARP asked me to investigate the alleged murders of these older Americans, whose ages range from 76 to 94. Over 18 months, I sifted through thousands of pages of court records, police reports, and witness statements, and interviewed dozens of relatives, lawyers, police, and others. Ultimately, two things became clear. First, while Schemmermer had been convicted of just two murders so far, the evidence against him for those and other cases is overwhelming and compelling. Second, the criminal justice system and the adult living complexes entrusted with protecting these victims' health and safety appeared to be blinded to the crimes by a fatal strain of ageism. In almost every case, investigators failed to collect fingerprints or DNA evidence, order autopsies, or photograph crime scenes, all standard death investigation practices, particularly when paired with a theft or burglary report, as was the case with nearly every homicide in this grim procession. Time and again, the deaths were attributed to heart attacks and strokes. Doris Gleason's suspicious death in 2016 was instantly attributed to natural causes. As her daughter, Shannon Dion, puts it, the mentality of it was, they were old and they just died. The most damning admission of an ageist and uncaring system came from Jeffrey Barnard, M.D., medical examiner for Dallas County. In Shamir Mir's first trial, he conceded that his office rarely orders autopsies for anyone over 65. Instead, thousands of unattended deaths, outside a hospital with no doctor present, are handled by phone, even those involving robberies or burglaries. Otherwise, he asserted, the workload would be overwhelming. No office can handle that. So you have decisions based on those cases, the findings, and the medical history. Barnard and his office, as well as the Collin County Medical Examiner, declined to comment for this story, citing ongoing investigations. When crime rates are rising in the major cities, the police and medical examiners would rather expend their forces on other crimes rather than on the death of someone who's reaching their expiration date, concludes Mitchell Roth, a criminal justice professor at Sam Houston State University in Huntsville, Texas, and an expert on serial killers who have reviewed the facts of the case, who has reviewed them. A police force also hates to admit there may be a serial perpetrator out there because it reflects badly on them. And the same is true of an upscale living facility. News of a serial killing there is bad for business. The beginning. Who did the killer target? Widows, mostly women, living alone, but women of means with the resources to pay for what they believed was safe housing. Most of the alleged murders, plus two attempted murders, described in indictments against Shamir Mir, were committed in upscale senior independent living complexes. These places are heavily marketed to buyers as secure places to retire to, and they aren't cheap. One rented apartments for $4,000 a month, and another required residents to buy in for as much as $1 million. But court records and police reports show that, for the 2 years prior to Shamir Mir's arrest, the murder victims were robbed of tens of thousands of dollars worth of jewelry, including wedding rings and large collections of gold, diamonds, and coins, as well as two safes. All too often, administrators at these complexes ignored the crimes and, most important, failed to warn other residents about intruders, home invasions, and major thefts. Shamir Mir was not dumb, said Dallas lawyer Trey Crawford, who represents 13 victims' families. He knew which facilities to go to, the target-rich environments that do not have robust safety and security measures. We counted 30 to 40 suspicious deaths within a 5 to 10 mile radius of where Shamir Mir lived. Billy Kipkorer Shamir Mir, age 49, could face trial for another 20 murders. A Kenyan-born immigrant, he held a series of short-term home health aid jobs during his 15-plus years as a legal permanent U.S. resident. He was comfortable around older people. His father lived to be 100, and he had years of experience caring for older, fragile people in private homes and upscale apartments. After working through healthcare agencies, he grew tired of paying commissions and began recruiting his own clients. When first questioned by a Dallas County homicide detective in March 2018, Shamir Mir explained away his presence at crime scenes by insisting he was simply soliciting healthcare work. Yet before his 2018 arrest, Shamir Mir was known to Dallas police as a small-time criminal with prior arrests and stints in jail for domestic violence, drunk driving, and trespassing. In the domestic assault case, he'd been convicted after admitting to beating an ex-girlfriend with a frying pan following a night of drinking at a Dallas club. At some point, Shamir Mir began to use a fake ID with the name Benjamin Koitaba, which allowed him to work at a Dallas home health care agency that required a background check he could not have passed under his real name. That company communicated with him only as Koitaba, and Shamir Mir frequently took short nighttime assignments. From 2016 to 2018, records show that Shamir Mir roamed the hallways and parking lots of at least three upscale senior living complexes where sudden deaths occurred. He was repeatedly stopped and questioned as an intruder, but then left free to continue. We believe one of his techniques was looking for women who walked their dogs or used walkers and needed extra time coming in their doors, said attorney Ali Ollinger, who worked with Trey Crawford to investigate the murders on behalf of victims' families. Chris Bianez, a Plano police officer who specializes in crime prevention and is familiar with the murders, notes that the serial killer didn't rely on fancy burglary tools or technology. It is in precisely these kind of cases, he says, that standard crime prevention techniques, like posting flyers to alert residents about an intruder, could have worked. He was committing robberies, but mainly he was able to access residents by just knocking on the door and posing as a maintenance worker or using some other way to gain their trust. As Dallas County District Attorney John Creazot said in the October trial for the murder of Mary Brooks, Shamir Mir had a fundamentally different approach to his job. "We go to work to produce," said Creazot. "He goes to work to kill, strip, steal, and sell." Though Shamir Mir repeatedly made unauthorized forays into senior living complexes for years before the murders were detected, he was arrested only once for trespassing at the Edgemere retirement community, where authorities believe the murder spree began. Catherine Sinclair, MD, had a successful medical practice. A U.S. Army veteran, she'd worked in hospitals in several states. Near the end of her career, she and her husband shared a sprawling home in Pennsylvania and had the means to collect gold and precious gems on regular trips to the Virgin Islands. She was still working ER shifts when her husband contracted cancer and then died. For a while, Sinclair kept rattling around their big old house. Then one day she called her beloved niece in Texas and said, "You know, this isn't really working for me." That niece, Jane Fold, and a nephew, Dan Probst, talked their aunt into moving closer to their families in Texas in 2014. Together, they settled on Edgemere, near the exclusive Dallas neighborhood of Highland Park. The place was luxurious. It offered condos for as much as $1 million, as well as an exceptional cuisine, a putting green, a jewelry cleaning service, an oversized pool, an upscale salon, and a spa. "It was as nice as any five-star hotel," said Probst. "I mean, dinner was served on cloth tablecloths with flowers on the tables and candles, and they would fix anything special you ordered." Sinclair soon settled in. She used a walker, but as far as her niece and nephew knew, took no medicine at all. She dined with them in early April 2016, and the 87-year-old had seemed in perfect health. So both were astonished when they were notified only a week later that their aunt had died. When they entered her apartment, things got stranger. "We saw blood on the bed," Probst recalls. "What's more, their aunt's oversized safe with her collection of gold, loose diamonds, and fine jewelry was gone." He and his sister insisted the Dallas Police Department open a homicide investigation, even though the Dallas County Medical Examiner quickly attributed Sinclair's death to natural causes. A robbery detective was assigned but didn't return calls for about a month. The Dallas Police Department, which had about 500 retirements in 2016, was regularly rotating that detective and other robbery and homicide detectives to patrol shifts. As for Edgemere, civil court records indicate that security guards detected several intruders in the independent living facility that year, but didn't always summons the police or immediately review security camera footage. Sinclair is now believed by her family to be Shamir Mayer's first victim, but her case remained unsolved and had already been officially attributed to natural causes when another Edgemere resident, Phyllis Payne, died the next month. At 91, Payne was still vibrant, a ball of energy, according to her daughter, Lauren Adair Smith, who lived nearby. Payne's brunette hair remained naturally dark, and she rarely complained of aches or illnesses. In fact, Payne provided welcome support to Adair Smith, whose husband had terminal cancer. "She was my best friend, and we talked every day," said Adair Smith, adding that she often invited her mother on family trips, including one to a beach in Gulf Shores, Alabama, in May 2016. But Payne was too busy to go on the trip. "Not this time," she had said. "I have too much going on." Payne loved hanging out with members of her longtime bridge club in Edgemere's party room and spent hours fussing over the menu and the seating arrangements. Adair Smith called her mother en route to Alabama and learned the gathering had been a success. Payne crowed that both the food and her cards had been really good. Adair Smith was dipping her toes into the warm waters in Gulf Shores on May 14th when she got another call. "Mom died," her brother said. "What? I just talked to her. What do you mean?" said Adair Smith, sinking to her knees on the sand. Adair Smith rushed back to Dallas, where her mother's tidy apartment appeared undisturbed. Only later, as she began packing up flatware and cleaning the fridge, did she notice the missing valuables. Pieces of silver, a coffee can her mom always kept in the refrigerator, a hiding place for her 18-karat gold jewelry. Adair Smith reported the thefts to the police and the complex's administrators. But again, no one reviewed security footage, no real investigation materialized, and Payne was declared to have died of natural causes. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. We will finish this story next week. I'm Joe Bickers. Have a wonderful week.